Assistant Universe.
Yes.
I'd like to welcome you to a feminist perspective.
Let that go for half an hour.
This weekly radio broadcast is sponsored by the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center, a program and information service of the Dean of Women's Office, 220 Strong Hall. Tonight's broadcast is part four of a four-part series.
God damn, I'm a piece of shit.
Our specific topic tonight was women and insurance programs.
Because we don't really.
A feminist perspective provides a forum for women themselves to speak publicly on issues of concern to them.
Why do you need this?
Helps inform other women and men of the movement which is remaking the shape and substance of women's and men's lives. The Women's Resource and Career Planning Center contains large amounts of information, news clippings, government documents, magazine articles, research studies, and books pertaining to the many aspects of the women's movement.
I can go track my life.
We would like to invite you to come in and browse or take advantage of the materials which can be borrowed. That's in 220 Strong Hall at the University of Kansas. We have three guests this evening to discuss women and insurance programs.
Fast forward the whole
First of all, we have Peg Springer. Peg, could you tell us
how tough would that be?
I'm with the Hayes Santee Insurance Agency at 20 East 9th Street in Lawrence, Kansas. I am an underwriter and the agency supervisor there.
An underwriter.
All right. Our second guest is Carolyn.
So this is the name for insurance person.
I am
underwriter. My name.
The wife of a. I'm a widow of a KU faculty member, and I'm here to discuss some of the experiences I have had with the health program under the State of Kansas Plan for State Employees.
Our third guest is Linda J. Jones. I'm Assistant Dean of Women at KU as well. And I've been working on this four-part series, Women in Economics, that we have had. We've talked about women as consumers, women in credit, and our program last week was on women in Social Security. So I'm here tonight to kind of follow up with some of the other things that we've talked about and see how this fits in as we discuss this vital issue of concern to all people and especially tonight to women.
Well, Linda, why don't you give us a little bit of background of what makes insurance so important for women, and why is it a problem area in your view?
Well, I've done a little bit of facts and figures type reading, and for example, with health insurance, we spend, as Americans, over $75 billion per year on health care. And even with this astronomical figure, Americans seem to be receiving poorer care and die earlier than individuals in other industrial nations. We spend 150% more today on health care than we did 10 years ago. And I think that's a little higher than the rate of inflation for other things that have been happening, you know, such as standard of living and all of that. Hospital charges in the past decade have tripled. And since 1960, doctor's fees have gone up 40%.
I mean, it just idles. Okay, what kind of machine is it? What type of speed shift does it have on it? Does it have the kind you pull in and push out, or is it just a thing you turn back and forth? Okay, is it an Ampex machine? Okay, that just happened to one of ours last week. And it's kind of, okay, we'll be over to fix it, because all I have to do is kind of fiddle with it to get it back in gear. But we'll get over there as soon as we can, and today, more than likely, and see if we can't get it running again. Yeah, sure thing. Bye-bye.
...ways because of insurance policies on their husbands, where they are dependents or where they are not breadwinners in their own right. And I believe that Mrs. Anderson has some things to say about that.
The problem that I discovered under the
insurance plan for Kansas State employees was a complete surprise to me after my husband passed away. I went down to the university in order to renew my health insurance, which meant paying for the insurance during the summer. And they accepted my check immediately after his death and said that I would be covered by health insurance and I had nothing to worry about. My son also checked and I was told it was absolutely covered. Then I made a trip with my family to Colorado and came back late in June. My husband died in early May. I was out mowing in the yard when the person in charge of retirement at the university called me and told me I had no health insurance. I turned off the mower immediately, thinking it was something that might cause damage, and began to telephone. And at that time, I was still not 65, so I was not eligible for that type of insurance. I finally found temporary insurance that was extremely expensive. Now, I had, my husband had paid into the health insurance program at the school he taught at before here and here for 30 years before he passed away. And there was no question in my mind of what if I paid, I could continue.
But that wasn't the case.
That was not the case. They first sent me a statement of a law that was passed in 62 or 63, in which it said children were covered, but widows not. I couldn't locate this particular copy. I think my lawyer still has it. I turned over a lot of that material. Then, May 26, 1971, this opinion was handed down by our present Attorney General. Now, this is a question that was asked him. May a dependent of a deceased state employee, retired state employee, or totally disabled former employee retain coverage under the state employee health and accident plan? And the answer is a flat no. I worked through our local senator, and he through the commissioner of insurance, and I have this further statement. May I respectfully point out that the health and accident program covering faculty members at KU is not a separate program, but that these members are covered under the state of Kansas plan for state employees. Therefore, your proposal would not only be applicable to the faculty members at KU, but would encompass the entire state employee group of some 25,000 people. I, of course, was reminded that the husband has insurance and has his wife and family covered. And one could think of them going out for a drive, having a serious car accident, the husband being killed, and there would not be any insurance if he died first, or the wife if she were badly injured. Well, this seems like a gross inequity as far as I can see. Why hasn't something been said about this in the past? Or are you the first one who has had it hit you so suddenly that it made such an impression on you, or have any of your friends been in this position before that they found out they weren't covered? Oh, yes, they have been, and there are members here in Lawrence. Some of them have gone back to work. Some have enrolled in a course at the university so they could be insured under the student health program, the student coverage program. They've done all sorts of things.
Sounds like where there's a will, there's a way.
But I was at the point where my age was such that it was not easy to pick up insurance then.
Well, this is so true. And by the time a person is in his 30s or 40s, a lot of them are already
disabled in some respect and can't obtain a health care policy that will cover them for everything. There might be some exclusions on the policy, and particularly in a woman where she is apt to have some area in her past medical history that an individual company wouldn't want to cover her. And at the age of 62, I can see you were faced with a very, very severe type problem. And how did you were able to get a policy with an individual company?
I got a temporary policy with the company that was carrying the university at that time.
Well, I would think this would be the best way to go about
it. But that was only, I got it that afternoon yet. I happen to have a friend that was working with an insurance company. And I did get, but it was very expensive. It lasted for only 3 months. It would not cover me after I went into Medicare. I have been able to get additional policies. Well, I had it before. One through the AAUW, their health policy, which, so far as I know, is very good. And then also retired teachers. Those two, they still are not nearly as adequate as the policies that we had at the university.
Well, those two policies are on you in terms of what you had done.
That's right.
In your own professional experience.
That's right.
AAUW is the Association, American Association of University Women. And because you were a member of this, you were eligible.
And there's an interesting thing about that policy when you travel abroad. You know, most health insurance is not effective. Including, at least this was true a year ago, the insurance that is carried by the state of Kansas on their employees. And the AAUW insurance does take care of you in beyond Medicare. And of course, Medicare doesn't do you good if you're overseas.
Of course, this is the reason so many people, when they do go out of the state, they get a trip accident type of coverage. Well, let me ask this, Mrs. Anderson, since you've done all this research and you've run up against all of these things, what is being done now to correct this? Because obviously something should be done.
Well, we worked on it during the last legislature.
Do you have a lobby?
No, not nobody, personally.
You haven't formed any sort of group?
No, only personal telephoning.
Is anybody else helping you?
Yes, one other faculty wife has done a great deal, but we were so disappointed in the outcome. They did change the policy that is in effect here at the university last year. There was so much objection when a professor went on leave, like to Europe or something, his insurance didn't hold. And there was a change in the last legislature, so that would hold. But the whole bill was so involved that this didn't get into it. And those that have been left in this situation that I know would be perfectly willing to pay all of their own way if they just had the right to continue on these policies.
Now, in your letter from Fletcher Bell, he's talking about the 25,000 people other than the employees. Are these people who would be survivors under this plan, or does this include the employees also?
I would suppose the employees. He doesn't say, but when the state employee group, he says. So that would be the entire 25,000.
Is he stressing the point that there are too many people to include in this, that they don't think they could go to survivor benefits, or what?
No, he didn't think there would be so many to be included.
And so he thinks it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, oh yes. It's simply a question of getting the bill through the legislature.
All right. How do you go from here? What can you do to lay the groundwork to get something done? Because I certainly...
Well, you have the patience of a saint on any bill you want to put through the legislature.
Well, in the meantime, how many people end up in the same position you were in?
Well, plenty.
And it not only affects the women as widows, how about the women who are working at the university who have their husbands covered under their policies? What if something happens to that woman? Then her husband and the survivors have no benefits, right? there isn't any coverage there for them either.
That's right.
So this isn't a matter of discrimination from a female-male standpoint of view. This is purely discrimination on a survivor standpoint of view.
It works out that way, since the predominant majority of faculty members and people covered by this.
I'm sure it does, but there are a lot of women working at the university now where it would affect them too in the event of an untimely death.
Peg, what kind of things should a woman be aware of as she looks through an insurance policy to figure out what she needs to be adequately covered? It sounds like one thing that's lacking in this policy is the conversion cost. Is that
right? And in other words, in any of your group policies that you acquire through working with an industry, there is generally a clause in the policy that says you may convert this policy to individual coverage at the end of 30 days. Or if you haven't done anything by the end of 30 days, then the company will generally drop it. But I know of one other policy where this couldn't be done here in Lawrence, but most of the time, the people who are setting up coverage like this are foresighted enough to go ahead and include a clause like this. And it would seem to me that the people who set up the state plan were sort of nearsighted in the fact that they act like what they're doing is taking the employee. Now we've got an employee working for the university, and we're going to keep him covered just as long as he's here. When he isn't here, that's it. But I would say that what they were thinking more of is somebody who leaves the university after a certain length of time. Now you probably would not want to give him a conversion privilege, but in the event of a death, it would seem that this is the type of clause that it should be in, that should be in the policy, so that, let's face it, a death is bad enough without being faced with a dilemma like Mrs. Anderson was in. She was too young to be included under Medicare, but she was actually too old to get a policy on her own, and I'm sure the rates are astronomical at her age. And it just doesn't seem like it's very fair. And I kind of wonder if there had been enough women on the committee that set up the state plan, if maybe somebody wouldn't have thought a little more deeply about this type of a conversion privilege for the woman or man.
That's a good point. Well, for example, what can I do at this point, a single woman just starting out in a career? I may or may not be married. You know, I have no idea at this point. So what would I do in terms of thinking about insurance coverage for myself? I'm totally dependent upon myself. I have no other source of income other than my profession. What should I do?
When a woman is going out into
talked to Maggie, and she said that something was changed about it.
Where she is going to be dependent completely upon her own endeavors. I think she needs two kinds of coverage. Number one, she needs some type of a basic life insurance policy that she ought to buy, even though she may be picking up some group from her company that she wants to work for. And the one thing she needs so badly is a monthly disability income policy. I happen to have been in the position myself where I became ill and had absolutely no coverage from any source, workman's comp, Social Security, a monthly disability income policy that I would have had on my own life. I had no coverage whatsoever, and I was a complete dependent upon my parents.
Instead of buying one,
I'd never be put in that position again.
I was
already 25, well, I guess I was 28 when this happened. And for 3 years, I was just completely a liability as far as my folks were concerned. And if it hadn't been for them, I don't know what would have happened to me. So every woman, no matter how young she is when she goes out, if she's on her own and she is dependent upon herself to earn her own bread and butter, she ought to buy some type of a monthly disability income policy, so in the event that it happens, she's got the coverage. And as far as a life insurance policy is concerned, she should have foresight enough to be thinking about her own return, not just because she might get married, but because if you buy the right kind of a life insurance policy, you're buying security for your own future. In addition to your Social Security benefits, you'll have some benefits at age 65, or if you're looking at it from a standpoint of view of what happens to whatever I own or whatever I have when if I'm suddenly taken out of the picture, she ought to have enough to for funeral expenses so that nobody has to take over in the event that something happens to her. And if you buy life insurance at a young enough age, hospitalization insurance at a young enough age, you're not going to be paying an astronomical price for it. And
that's a very good point. This is something that I had discovered, that if I would purchase a life insurance policy now, the premiums, you know, and the monthly bills would be so much less than if I wait even 5 years.
And also, there's one way that a woman has a benefit from a life insurance policy that the men don't have. Our insurance is cheaper. If you take the rate for a man 28, and you deduct the woman's insurance at 28, I said it backwards. The woman's insurance at 28 is the same price as a man is at 25. So you just take a base rate for 3 months, 3 years less, and you have her rate. So we do get our life insurance cheaper because of the fact that actuarially a woman is going to live longer than a man.
I understand that there are some women who are upset about this, though, because at the other end, when they become 65 and they're ready to start drawing the benefits, they are given less money per month, and they are told that's because we expect you to live longer for more months, and yet it takes the same amount of money for them to live during each month that it does for a man. Do you think that is prevalent in life insurance?
As far as I know, if you buy a $10,000 life insurance policy, a whole life policy, say, at age 65, the benefits for a woman would be the same as they are for a man. I'm not familiar enough with the life insurance end of it, and I couldn't give you a definite answer on that. That would be something that you might want to find out a definite answer from some life agent.
Should ask about.
I am not a licensed life agent. And I intend to be, but so far I have a general license, and this, of course, is in your casualty line. But there are so many things that you can do with a life insurance policy. It's a forced savings plan, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, a lot of people are trying to save money, but they aren't. And your Social Security benefits, as they are finding out, are not adequate enough to pay for it, to keep a family going like they've been used to during their working years. The Social Security benefits are not enough to compensate for the retirement.
No, I'm recording it onto the cassette from that machine over there.
That will, in addition to your Social Security, that will help you. Also, a life insurance policy is probably one of the best means of collateral in obtaining a loan to the bank that you can have. You don't have to buy credit life on a loan if you have a life insurance policy that you can assign.
That fits in with what we had talked about in other shows.
Yeah, it's not
exactly what it takes to be able to get credit.
So this would certainly be an asset as far as a woman's concerned, because the banks have yet to look at a divorced woman or a single woman in the same light they look at a divorced man.
Who's that uppity broad?
And I cannot figure that out.
She's
Peggy. I had thought of Carson.
Peggy, somebody from the ASMT agency downtown.
For 30 years. And I had no idea. I mean, health insurance. And I thought I was set up. Mm-hmm. I can just imagine how you felt when you let out to shut off the mower.
Oh,
I think that Mrs. Anderson has experienced part of the some kind of difficulty that women have had with insurance, finding out that they, as dependents, do not have the coverage. Other women have discovered the discrepancies when they reach 65. A lot of women discover that because you have a uterus, that is equivalent to an act of God. You are not covered by the act of your uterus if you, for your health insurance if you have complications of a pregnancy.
Much less for an abortion.
Yes, that those kind of things are
sakes.
Not covered as health insurance.
Program rated X.
I think there are people have...
Why don't you say cut, honey? That'd really catch people's ear.
Yeah.
Or snatch, or...
Get involved, and Mrs. Anderson is doing something excellent in getting involved through legislation. What about the future of women in the insurance industry? I think that you are a rarity, Faith.
You don't have a uterus.
Well, fortunately, I had an opportunity to go to work for an insurance agency in as a general agency secretary.
In our conversation,
and I know that's got my feet wet that way, and I found out it was a very, very worthwhile thing to be in, and also it was a challenge because there aren't too many women in the insurance industry. Times have changed so much from then to now. Now, I was the agency secretary, so I did all the paperwork. Then, here now, since 1962 to 1973, we have had a complete turnabout. They are after women in the insurance industry. And there are so many doors open. You can go to a home office if you have a law degree. You can be excellent in the claims department. Get some experience there. If you want to set up a practice yourself, later on, fine. This gives you excellent experience. Actuary. Okay. Get a degree in data processing. Practically every big insurance company going down the road has a computer system going. And they're dying for people. For
going now, down the road.
That's right. As an underwriter, if you get your agent's license, you can sell insurance until you're 90. There's nobody saying at age 65 you have to quit.
Okay, come on, end this goddamn thing.
And
time's
I
up.
Just encourage women to look into this.
Time's up, lady.
When the people come for interviews in the spring, check with the Dean of Women's Office and see if there is anybody coming from a life insurance company. Because the opportunity is there for a woman, and I think as far as lucrative benefits are concerned, it is a fascinating field to be in, as well as a challenging field.
Right. That's what I said to doing. Come on.
Woman.
Everybody was laughing except her.
Wrap it up.
Can I borrow one of those?
You don't have a man saying, you can't do this.
Yeah, you let people out there.
Okay.
I think that we
certainly have.
Find out how important insurance is to women, what you can do in the area of legislation, and also what you can do in the area of a career future. I'd like to thank our guests, Peg Springer, Carolyn Anderson, and Linda Jones, for being with us tonight, and invite you all to listen to A Feminist Perspective next week.